Hello and welcome to Fly Fishing Tales. In this edition, we're in pursuit of salmon in Scotland and a lost silver stoat, probably at this very moment, travelling the motorways of Britain, but more of that later. We're in the company of David Profumo, the long-standing fishing correspondent of Country Life magazine. David is a writer, mainly of articles and books on fly fishing, and is the son of John Profumo, the defence minister whose affair with Christine Keeler created a scandal in the 1960s. David's book on the subject, written in 2007, was called Bringing the House Down. His own life is a little less colourful. He was a lecturer in English at King's College London and deputy editor of Fiction magazine, as well as a columnist for the Daily Telegraph. This conversation with him was recorded in 1998 as part of the original Fly Fishing Tales audio cassette series and was the first salmon story featured. It was caught on the River Shin, which is one of the east coast rivers in Scotland, running down to the Kyle of Sutherland and then on to the Dornoch Firth at Bonner Bridge. And what a tale it is. But first, a little about David's fishing.
So, David, a fisherman for how long?
Fisherman since the age of four, which is now, sadly, well over 40 years. I was very successful with my first outing and caught a fish, and I think I've been hooked ever since, like so many other people who've made it part of their life.
And how much fishing do you get done?
I get a lot fishing done, and as a full-time writer, I suppose I should get a little less fishing done and a bit more writing done. However, I find the two have to have a symbiotic relationship, the one with the other.
Salmon fishing, is that your first love?
It was my first love, and now, although in the past few years I've been quite lucky and I've done a lot of fishing for other types of species, fly fishing abroad, salmon fishing is the type of fishing to which I return, partly because, if not quite on our doorstep here in West London, it is at least within the United Kingdom, and I think there's a certain amount of patriotism attached still to pursuing the native species. There's also something intensely glamorous to me about the ocean-going salmon, imperiled as it is as a species these days, and there's a mixture of love and desire, I think, in the pursuit of these very elusive fish.
Are you a traditionalist? Do you believe in using old-style tackle and equipment and traditional methods, or are you a modernist?
I think I'm a traditionalist, but without being totally retro. There is a school of angling which exists and has a number of adherents these days, which tends to suggest that using old-fashioned tackle and dressing up in a tie and a Norfolk tweed jacket is much more within the keeping of the traditions of the sport. And I have some sympathy for that. On the other hand, there are many modern items in my arsenal and my armoury which I bring to bear when necessary. I feel that it's the cast of mind which is important in fishing, and to understand the context within which fishing is done in the modern period. And to do that, I think you have to understand a little bit, ideally, about the history and the traditions of the sport.
Why is the salmon so important a quarry for you?
Well, the salmon is, to me, one of the most elusive and romantic of fish that swim. And I think now, without wanting to sound as if I'm showing off, I've probably caught over 40 different species of fish on the fly rod. But I keep coming back to salmon. I find their whole life cycle a source, almost a symbolic source of mystery and excitement. And this is very much part and parcel of the process of fishing for me, because there are long periods of time spent on the water when you may not even see a glimpse or a glimmer of your quarry, but in your mind they are swimming, even though in diminished numbers these days. The salmon represents for me all that is most exciting about the struggle of the animal with its native element. As I'm sure most people know, it is born in the native river and goes out to sea on this long pilgrimage to the ice caps, where it feeds for one or sometimes several winters, putting on weight, packing on pink muscle in this lovely silver livery. And if it can escape the high seas nets and the depredations of others who would intercept it on its return journey, by an extraordinary combination which is still much misunderstood, even by scientists who devoted a lot of research to it, by a combination of navigation through the magnetic influence of the poles, the tidal currents, and eventually by an intense sense of smell, it comes back in, I think, something like over 95% of each instance to the little stream where it was spawned years before. And I don't think one has to push too far to see this as an image of persistence, and indeed a certain glamour and romance, which has something to do with the thrill of casting a fly over the waters as it comes back upstream to spawn, and in many cases to die.
Do individual fish have personalities to you?
I think that would be taking it a little far, but fish caught have therefore in some way been connected to my experience, and physically sometimes I have touched them, either killed them in many cases, or set them at liberty again. And each one of those I think I can remember, even without recourse to my fairly extensive journals as they now are. And they are different. Fish have different behaviour patterns, I'm sure. And most anglers have a kind of blend of natural law and science which they bring to bear on the pastime. And I am certainly not a scientist. I rather like the mystique of fishing. I like the superstitions that surround fishing and the idea that each salmon, each migratory fish, has a slightly different personality. I find a very attractive one.
Do salmon fishermen have different personalities, or is there something about the person that goes in pursuit of salmon that binds them all together?
I think there is a certain camaraderie. Just as we were saying that the salmon itself is can be seen as an image of persistence, I think you have to be, especially these days, very persistent as a salmon angler, especially if you're fishing in the British Isles, where salmon are becoming very rare. I feel, especially if you're trying to catch a salmon in the spring, when they're at their most glamorous and desirable in physical terms, it's almost like going on a unicorn hunt these days. But nonetheless, on opening day, you will see serried ranks of anglers, where permitted, casting and casting from some cases the middle of January until the end of November, on the off chance that something grabs hold of their line. But a lot of fishing, I think, is done in one's head.
What about Scotland as a place to go fishing salmon? I guess that's where one in some ways automatically thinks of catching salmon. Is that a special place for you?
It has been. I've been very privileged, I have to say that, because from the age of about 10, I was allowed to go salmon fishing in the company of adult members of my family, because my uncle had a small sporting estate on the east coast of Sutherland, and regularly every summer we were invited up for a fortnight to go and stay there. So I associated with my teenage years the thrill of being allowed to go out with grown-ups in what I see as a very adult pursuit, which is casting a fly for a salmon. And I was left to my own devices for the first few years under the tutelage of a marvellous man called Mr. Murray, who was my uncle's head gillie, I suppose you'd call it nowadays. And gradually he coached me into some of the more arcane technical aspects of fishing for salmon. Needless to say, it was always during August, which is probably the least favoured time on many rivers because there's a lack of water as well as a lack of fish. But it was a great thrill to be inducted into what I think are some of the mysteries of the traditional aspects of salmon fishing in Scotland. The reason one associates salmon fishing with Scotland as a British angler is because so much of the literature of the High Victorian period and later was associated with exploring the salmon waters of Scotland. And I remember particularly, not my first ever salmon, although that was remarkable, but the second salmon I ever caught, which indeed was caught in Scotland, and it was caught on an east coast river of Sutherland called the River Shin, which is a shortish hydroelectric river which runs into the Kyle of Sutherland, along with a number of other well-known smaller salmon rivers like the Cassily and the Carron and the Oikle. And my uncle rented 3 days a week some fishing on this river during the month of August. And it's a very spectacular river. It's got one of the most marvellous falls pools I've seen anywhere in Britain. And indeed, there's a little cafe at the cliff top by the Falls of Shin where charabancs regularly disgorge the tourists to take photographs of the salmon leaping up from this boiling gorge. And it was a most exciting river to fish, especially if you were learning, because there weren't very well-defined pathways where you could stand and cast your fly. In some cases you were hanging off a cliff by a piece of wire in order to try and get your fly or lure over the lie where you hoped the fish would be. So there were commando style tactics sometimes, which very much appealed to the long-haired teenager with his camouflage jacket and rather dubious deer stalker. Also, the Shin, because it's a hydro river, has twice a week, or did in those days, a certain amount of compensation water let down, which produced an artificial spate or rise in water or freshet. And this sometimes brought the summer salmon on when otherwise they'd have been manic depressive sulkers at the bottom behind the boulders. So there was always a chance, and that's rather nice when you go salmon fishing. It was never hopeless. And I remember one evening, and it must have been in 1971, that I was fishing at the top of a pool called Rocky Cast. I had my uncle's rod, and he'd retired, I think, somewhere into the gloaming to puff on his pipe. It was an old rod. We were saying about traditional salmon fishing techniques. This was a really old rod. It was a Grant Vibration, which is made of solid greenheart, spliced with the original old leather strips, with a lovely, hardy, perfect reel and a silk line. And I was fishing down rather unsuccessfully, not making a very good fist of it, I have to say. A couple of fish had moved below the fly, but I think they were just window shopping. And then as we came into the throat of Rocky Cast, I remember seeing my fly, and it was a silver stoat, about a number 6, I feel, or maybe an 8. I'm afraid it's long gone, along with the deer stalk into which it was inserted. And as it came round over the surface of the water, something came up and just cancelled it, rather like a typing error. And the next thing I felt was the deep resistance of a big, unseen fish. And of course, this is really what the whole thing is about. And in traditional textbook style, the reel sang, the fish whizzed off downstream, pulled off a lot of line. We scrambled over these rocks, plunging through the shallows, being careful not to fall in. We went down through another pool, and then another pool, and finally down to a pool called, of all things, Paradise. And just as the light was going in Paradise, I managed to catch up with this fish. And Mr. Murray was there in attendance, puffing along with his silk cup, cupped in his palm. And I felt that the fish was coming, and we still had never seen it. Now, the Shin is a river that's, even today, well known for its large fish. And as the fish made a pass in, clearly against the evening glare, the gillie could see what I could not. And he uncorked his gaff, which in those days was a legitimate way of landing a fish, especially in a precipitous river, which is a large, sharp hook on the end of a staff. And he leant over the rock and impaled this fish and brought it up into the evening light. And it was 21 pounds, which for many years was the largest salmon which I ever saw on the end of my line. And I'll never forget seeing it squirming there in this evening light, the silvery light. And it wasn't a fresh fish, it was a dark, what we call a tartan fish. These days you'd put it back, with a huge kipe or beak on him. It was a male fish. It had obviously been in the river for some time. And it looked fearsome. It didn't look like the textbook silver fresh run fish at all. It was almost like something you might have caught out of the sea. And I remember feeling, and this was the important thing for me, admixed with my thrill and my sense of satisfaction, a sense of awe that this was a beast that somehow, by fortune or possibly mischance, I conjured out of that pool all those yards upstream. But we killed him and we kept him. And we took him back up and in the headlights of the Land Rover displayed it to my uncle. And I remember the first thing he said, rather than well done, was, "Good God, what a brute." And at that moment, I suppose a very important thing was impressed upon me, which was that whatever else it may be, fishing is also a matter of life and death, and that we had chosen to kill this fish. And as a teenager, I learnt that when you put your fly in the water, or any other lure, you have to be aware that another creature's life is going to be involved in the process. So although it's fun, and I think it's perfectly legitimate to take fish if you're going to eat them, you have to understand that you are dealing in a much larger business than just a sport. Now, I've been very lucky all over the world since then, but I think there are very few other salmon that I've ever landed, whether I've kept them or put them back, that have made such a lasting impression upon me as that one that evening in the pool called Paradise.
Wonderful. Unsurprisingly, David decided that the catch required a keepsake to remind him of the whole wonderful experience, but there was a twist in the tale.
I kept the fly that I caught that big fish on, the silver stoat, and I put it in my tweed hat, and I kept it for years as a kind of good luck talisman, until a couple of years ago it was sitting in the back of my car, and the car and the hat were stolen and vanished forever. So if anyone out there driving along happens to see a tweed hat somewhere with a silver stoat in it, please could I have it back, because it's mine.
David Profumo, and you can catch up with David's writing in Country Life magazine, and he's written a number of fishing books, including In Praise of Trout and The Magic Wheel, an anthology of fishing literature. He's published two novels, Sea Music, about a family fishing holiday in the Western Isles of Scotland, and The Weather in Iceland, which isn't about fishing at all. His account of the Profumo scandal is called Bringing the House Down, a family memoir. That's it from this edition of Fly Fishing Tales. I hope you've enjoyed it. Do pass on the details to other fisher folk. And until the next time, from me, it's goodbye.